How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvers and Dave Meltzer here on Wrestling Observer Radio. It is Monday night, April 6, 2009, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. Day after WrestleMania, the first Raw after WrestleMania, and it was a interesting show, I guess. Yeah. Any thoughts on it?
I don't know. I mean, Ricky Steamboat seemed like the star of the show.
Yeah.
That was kind of a nice segment. And, of course, the big news was the return of Batista, and that Vicky Guerrero has been the first person drafted away from SmackDown. So, and they announced, which they had to do, I mean, given that we're only 3 weeks away from the next pay-per-view. We didn't get even a clue of anything except for two matches. I mean, it wasn't even like they built anything. It was so we've got the return of Dave Batista teaming with Shane McMahon and Triple H against Legacy in a championship match. So it's TNA.
I have so many things to say about this show. But
and then the other championship match is John Cena defending against Edge in Edge's last chance, which is weird because he just lost the title last night, and now the rematch is his last chance.
And she cackled. She cackled
and
about
there's
this.
There's something going on, which they hinted at, because it's also a last man standing match. Because Vicky Guerrero, when she said last chance, she started laughing every time. And the laugh didn't go anywhere, but clearly it wasn't like she started laughing because she thought something was funny. So apparently, you know, either she's ditching Edge and they're breaking up the marriage, or I don't know what.
Or maybe she just was supposed to say last chance, because it's last man standing, and she forgot. And that's why she came back out.
Maybe. I'll check on that one.
It is
possible.
I know is that she...
Because that's right, because she left, and all of a sudden she comes back out, and oh, by the way, it's a last man standing match.
Yeah.
That was like a Mike Adamly moment.
It was like, what is happening on the show? And she comes out, and first thing she says is, they gave me a choice. I can only be the general manager of one brand, Raw or SmackDown. So first off, ECW just got buried right there, but that's beside the point. So she goes, I've chosen Raw. So, of course, SmackDown is the lame brand because she chose Raw.
Well, I mean, like, that's just the case now. I mean, you know, it's not a year ago where they had high hopes for, you know, the thing on My Network. I mean, they know My Network is probably a lame duck network anyway. And even if it's not, I mean, SmackDown is, you know, it's not the days where SmackDown and Raw were drawing pretty similar, you know, audiences. You know, I mean, when the numbers were fairly close. The numbers aren't close. They're not going to be close. SmackDown's down 25%, you know, for the, you know, at you know, 22-25% on a weekly basis, and Raw is, you know, down a little bit, but not like that. And I mean, Raw's doing 5+ million viewers most weeks, and SmackDown's doing 3.5. So, you know, it's not going to be, you know, I'm just interested to see how everything's going to, you know, because next week's going to be real, real interesting, but with the draft. But you know, it's before it was. The idea that both brands were even, and now the idea is that there's not even lip service. Raw is the A brand, and SmackDown is going to have enough talent to where if they go on the road, they don't want to draw ECW crowds of, you know, 1,000 people, you know, like they did with ECW. They want to be able to at least draw their 3,000 people at the house shows, and that's what SmackDown is going to be. It's going to be strong enough in their minds to draw some people, but it's clearly the big angles and everything, all the main events on the pay-per-views are going to come from the Raw side.
Well, hold on. That's missing the point here was, first off, when she chose Raw, that's all fine and dandy if she's going to come out and say what you just said, or just that Raw is the...
Oh, I'm choosing Raw because
it's lame, she said.
That SmackDown is a lame brand and that network's about to go out of business.
Well, hold on.
You can't say that.
Hold on. She came up here and said, I chose Raw because I find Raw to be lame, stale, and boring.
That's true. She did. Yeah, but she's a heel saying that. I think that's the idea.
Still, it's retarded. I don't know.
Actually, you're right. It's retarded. That is something that they would say on TNA.
She chose a brand and then ran down the brand she chose. So you buried both brands. I don't know. There was a lot of stuff on the show that that reeked of TNA, and that was one of those things.
Well,
and as you mentioned, the title match is going to be, it's Big Dave Batista, Hunter, and Shane against Legacy. Where if, for example, Cody Rhodes pins Shane, Randy Orton gets the title.
Right, which is ridiculous.
And if Batista, of course, pins anybody, then Hunter keeps the title. So it's really just the...
Which is also... But the whole idea of a championship match in a six-man tag is ridiculous.
Yes, it is. And I cannot come on here and not bury this because I've buried it in TNA. I must be fair. This is a horrible idea.
Well, it's... Yeah, you know what? And
not to mention the fact, didn't Vince come out at the beginning of the show and say, you're not even getting a chance at the title? And then all of a sudden he made us a title match?
Well, Vicky made it a title
Vicky
match.
Oh, Vicky did. That's right. Vicky did. Never mind.
But that would mean that Vicky went against Vince's orders, and Vince didn't even say anything.
Yeah, Vince didn't care. Apparently, she's this great power now as the Raw GM.
Yeah, that was pretty lame. Vince saying you're not going to get another title match, and then not only does he get the title match, but he gets it under the lamest stipulations of all time anyway.
Maybe since let me think about this. I was trying to figure out some way that Orton got in Vicky's good graces. Maybe they're dating now or something. I don't know. Anyway,
well, that'd be new.
Let's run down the show segment by segment because there's a lot of different things to talk about here coming out of WrestleMania. It opened up with Orton coming down to the ring and talking about how he'd been whacked with his sledgehammer, which was illegal, and he was very, very upset. And all he did was ask for his rematch. He didn't even point out this whole stipulation they'd built up where if Hunter used it, he'd lose the title. You would think this would be an important key to this for Randy Orton, but no.
That's what I was thinking when the show ended, being that that's what they were building up on TV the week before and the week before that. But
dropped.
I mean, I've got to start, because it's becoming a really bad habit, but I have got to start no longer thinking when I watch these shows.
This is a bad...
Because I keep thinking, okay, what makes sense next? And they, before I used to think, what makes sense next? And, 90% of the time, 80% of the time, that's where they were going. And now it's like 0% of the time.
This is bad.
Well, yeah, I suppose. I mean, their business hasn't gone to hell, though.
But this is the kind of thing that leads to your business going to hell.
Well, it's true. WCW would do this, and WCW's business did go to hell. Well, the one thing they got going for them is WCW's business also went to hell because there was a competing company that was so much better. If WCW was a monopoly promotion when they were going to hell, they might have... Their business still would have gone way down because it really was absolutely hideous. But maybe it wouldn't have dropped as much because there was no alternative. Because, yeah, you could say TNA, but TNA is not an alternative. And, and TNA's is not in the last two or three weeks, because actually TNA has been pretty good on TV the last two or three weeks. But, if we go on the last couple months, TNA has been wacky as shit. So, you don't, and it's just a low-rent alternative. It's not like it's two somewhat even, branches.
So anyway, he threatened Linda or the grandchildren, and of course Vince was most concerned about the children, not his wife. And he came out and got angry, and
well, at least that's realistic.
Well, sure, yeah, I guess it is. He signed the original match was Triple H, Shane, and Vince against Orton, Rhodes, and DiBiase, and then Randy accused him of hiding behind his family and challenged him to a one-on-one match, which Vince accepted for later. And really, my favorite part of this entire segment was when they were trying so hard to make us think that last night's match was actually good, with like Lawler saying, I can't believe Orton is even walking after that match last night.
And Orton going with a sledgehammer.
Yeah, Orton goes, you people enjoyed every second of Hunter beating on me. And I thought, you enjoyed no seconds of that. I was there. You're lying.
You know what? Tonight, I really think that Triple H had it right all along when he never wanted to be acknowledged because he thought that would weaken him. Because I think that's part of it. I think that he's now, he's now this, McMahon family member, and it all of a sudden is like, he's the son of the boss who gets to be world champion, and there's like a, in this day and age when people know what's going on, that's a, like the hardcore fans used to know it and hate it, but now, even though everyone knows it, it's like it wasn't in their face, and now it's like it's in their face. Okay, he's a McMahon, and because I just remember my brother-in-law and his friends were over once. We were watching TNA, and this is when Jeff Jarrett was always champion, right? And so Jeff comes out, and one of the guys just goes, "Is it true that Jeff owns the company?" I go, "Yeah," and he goes, "You own the company, you make yourself world champion. Is there anything lamer than that?" And I just thought, that's, these are people who, didn't know, but like when they think about it that way, it's like, you make yourself world champion because you own the company. It's like, how insecure can you be? And I think that's, I think that another thing too is that I think a lot of people just figured that it was just based on the buildup for months, that was Randy Orton's time to win. And then when Triple H won, it's kind of like, oh, my God, you're the son-in-law of the promoter, and you're just world champion again, and, you know, it's just stale. And
yeah, people didn't care long before the finish of that match.
Yeah, because, I mean, the key thing tonight was, because of what happened last night, and maybe this was booked beforehand anyway, but I was watching the way the whole thing set up in the main event, and I could sense that the whole thing was set up for Triple H to make this big run in because to get the people behind him. And it was. I mean, they got all that heat on Vince and Shane, and they're stomping, and the people are just sitting there, and Triple H runs down, and they don't pop at all.
No.
And I thought, that was a worse sign than last night, because last night it was at least, you know, it was 4 hours into the show. They had the greatest match, you know that they've probably seen in Houston in years. And then, you know, and Triple H and Orton didn't have a great match. But this was everything set up for that, just that one pop as he ran out, and he didn't get the pop at all. And I'm thinking that, I don't know what it is. You know, maybe it was just they saw that match last night and they're bored with him. I don't know. But you know, it's bad. In fact, someone emailed me today. I thought this was kind of hilarious. It was a serious question. It's like, you know, now that he was, like, on top and he didn't get over, does that mean that they're going to, like, go, you know what? Like, you know, he shouldn't be on top. And I just, like, started laughing. I don't know why. That question just made me laugh. Because, you know, what can you say?
The answer is he will continue to be on top.
Well, his wife is the writer.
Yeah.
And is, you know, I mean, he's going to continue to be on top. You know, he's got to get that Ric Flair record.
Yep.
Among other things.
Which is going to be, he's going to be more hated the closer he gets to that number. And I don't know if you noticed or not, but every time they went backstage with Triple H, you could just hear the people booing. And
well, they booed Cena tonight, too. And yeah. I heard that they were booing Punk, too, although I didn't notice that so much on television. But I heard that, too. So.
Well, I think they may have booed Punk because Punk got the tag when everybody wanted to see Steamboat.
No. They were booing Punk when like when they showed videos, when they showed the videos from WrestleMania before the show.
I see.
They booed Cena and Punk like really loud when both of them won.
Huh.
Yeah.
Collins against Miz and Morrison in a rematch for the Unified Titles. This was not as good as last night, everybody, for those
really?
Of you that...
Because I thought that match wasn't too bad. It wasn't... Carlito was off at the beginning.
It wasn't bad, but last night was a better match.
Okay. I mean, I don't know. I thought it was a pretty decent match.
Yeah, this one had more use of the lumberjacks, and Morrison did the cool dive off the post. But last night was a better wrestling match, and ended up with Miz... with Carlito in electric chair position, and Carlito slipped behind and did the backcracker. It was a little mistimed, but it was a creative idea for the finish. And what I loved, another thing that's made me so mad, the match is over, and Lawler is explaining that in the draft next week, these two brothers could get drafted to different brands, and they'd have to split up.
Isn't
and I thought,
ludicrous?
They're the Unified Champions!
But
they work on every
anyway,
brand!
Miz and Morrison appear on all three brands anyway.
Yeah.
So why and we, you know, we had Rey Mysterio and Evan Bourne tag team when they were on two different brands, even though it only lasted a couple weeks because Evan Bourne got hurt. But I mean, you know, that, you know, that's not you know, I mean, they Mark Henry and Kane teamed up, you know, on just like a week ago.
Yeah.
So I mean,
I don't
yeah,
know
that,
if I don't
that
know
whole
if I...
draft thing, it's like they make this draft out to be all monumental, but to me, like, everything they've done in the last 3 months has so blurred those lines that what is it?
Well, that's the entire point. I was talking about this on one of the other shows in that the whole idea of this draft is to make it seem like it's a big deal that a guy can go to any show. You should not be doing this 2 weeks after WrestleMania, where the entire build to WrestleMania is all about all the guys working all the shows.
Yep.
The draft should be 6 months later after everybody's kind of stayed on their show for a certain period of time, and you're not making a big point of, we got a big interpromotional match this week and next week and the week after, and then we're going to do a draft and mix it all up. There's nothing to mix up. Everybody's been working every show.
Yeah.
So I'm not a big fan of that.
Oh, yeah, all the topics. And tonight, hey, look at tonight.
Tonight, there were guys all over this show from every single brand.
Yeah, guys from all brands were in different matches. Guys that were retired were in matches. Guys that were owners were matches. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we had Shane meeting with Vince. And, of course, Vince went back down. So Shane went to talk to Hunter. We had a 10-woman match. Again, brand against brand.
Right. This is like TNA.
Yeah, brand against brand to promote a brand whatever it is next week, a draft to different brands.
I just wish that, like, to me, I wish that instead of putting those 10 in that they did, I wish they would have put those women in from last night that we didn't see.
It may as well have. They should have.
I know what they looked like. Yeah. I didn't know until today that Joy Giovanni was in that battle royal.
Really?
Did you know?
I couldn't see a thing from where I was at.
Yeah, I mean, today, I don't remember what it was. Someone emailed me and just goes, you know, what did Joy Giovanni look like? And hell if I know. I didn't know she was in the match. I don't know if they, I don't think they ever mentioned her name once.
No.
And, you know, yeah, so anyway, she was in that match.
Melina had
I wonder, maybe she's out to get revenge on Vicky Guerrero for stealing Big Show.
Could be. Gail had her first big moment of action in this match, and unfortunately was against Melina, and it was bad.
Yeah, I was real disappointed in that because it was all of a sudden, it made me realize that, like, the Gail Kim that wrestled Awesome Kong is no longer with us.
No.
I mean, she tried. They both, like, went out there to do a bunch of athletic stuff, and it just was not good.
So Mickey pinned Beth, and the match was horrendous. That's all I got to say about that.
She pinned Beth Dingus was in the match.
Beth? Oh, she pinned, the other, Natalya.
She pinned Natalya Neidhart, yeah.
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
actually was the best worker in the whole match.
The other glam was on.
Yeah. The other glam. The one that they don't give TV time to.
They all mix together.
So I got interviewed by the Calgary Herald, and, you know, Natalya's out there. It's, you know, the reporter's basic premise of the story is that, you know, that Natalya's actually, you know, learned to work, you know, in you know, all over the world, and she's a good wrestler. And she's a pretty girl too, and she's being held back because she's got Neidhart genetics. You know what I mean? She's never going to be able to look like those women. It's just impossible. And so, and the guy was kind of lamenting that, and then he talks to her, and unfortunately, you know, whether she believes it or not, and I doubt she does. Oh no, these women are all great athletes, and they're not here for their looks. They're here because they're great athletes, and it's like. I guess you have to say that. So he used me saying, like, well, you know, I don't know about that. But
good quote right there.
Yeah, but I really do think just because she's, like, one of the best workers in the group, that at some point, like Victoria, you know, she'll probably at least get a role for a little while before they phase her out. But
Victoria?
Yeah, Victoria.
Oh, like Victoria.
Victoria,
okay.
Victoria turned into a good worker.
Okay, yeah.
I think,
yeah.
Not a great worker, but you know, among the women after Trish Stratus, she's probably the best one for a while there.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, then at the end they just jobbed her out too. So
then we had a big Superstars of WrestleMania 10-man tag: Jeff, Punk, Ray, Cena, and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, making his full-time return to wrestling against Jericho, Kane, Matt, Edge, and The Big Show. And Steamboat was, in fact, the star of the match. Hopefully all the guys on his team were watching him sell and learning something. And
he was great. He was much better tonight than he was last night.
Yeah, it was. He's so great. He's such a great babyface in peril, and he got to do a lot of that tonight. And
he knows when to do the little comebacks. His timing is impeccable.
Yeah.
It always was. Like last night, it's funny because, you know, a lot of people were real, real high on Steamboat last night that didn't grow up with him. And unfortunately, you know, like I was talking with someone from the Carolinas this afternoon and we grew up with him, you know, I mean, I watched Ricky Steamboat in the 70s. And I mean, the guy's, you know, was always like this awesome worker. And to me, it was a little bit sad because he did miss spots and he never missed spots when he was young and he did get tired. And I mean, I watched that guy do, you know, I wouldn't say a lot of 60-minute matches, but a few. And I certainly watched him do a lot of 30-minute matches, and I'd never remember him being out of wind, ever.
Yeah.
And so it was kind of like, oh, you know, it was nice. I mean, you know, after Snuka, you know, I mean, he was, you know, I mean, what can you say? He was incredible. But tonight, I mean, he was in for just the right amount of time, and the people also were really with him even from the very start. It's like they wanted him to look good, and they put him in positions, you know, to shine. They didn't put him in, because usually when they put those the old people in there, they put him in positions to bury them. And you know, they he did a flying body press for the finish, even though he didn't get the pin. I mean, he was he essentially sort of, you know, was in on the pin, you know, type of a finish. And, he made the match. And the thing at the end, you know, where they basically had all the baby faces leave the ring and let him go in the ring. And then, you know, all, you know, like, you know, they gave him a moment. It was really cool.
Yeah. The best part of this match, actually, was he's selling, and they're beating on him, and he's selling, and the fans start chanting, "Let's go, Steamboat." And Lawler's like, he's marking out in the booth, and all of a sudden he just goes, "This is great!" And then Michael Cole goes, "Well, it's not so great was for Steamboat." It's like, well,
you know what?
It was great, but...
Michael Cole and Lawler, the last 2 days, they haven't been good at all.
I didn't see yesterday, so I don't know.
Oh, yeah, you get right. You wouldn't have. Yeah, they I mean, Lawler was bad last night.
Yeah.
I mean, tonight I wouldn't say he was bad, but wasn't good. But I just feel sorry for Michael Cole because, you know, whatever he is, good or bad, it's like he doesn't have a chance.
Yeah. We got a great Michael Cole story that's coming up in the newsletter this week as well. It's actually a funny story, a good story about Michael Cole. So That's this week's preview. So then we had Hunter backstage trying to talk some sense in events, and he refused to hear it. And Hunter told him he was proud of him for being a hot-headed SOB. So there you go. We had Vicky doing her little deal, talking about Raw being boring and stagnant. And then she announced the matches, that sort of thing. We had Santino coming out as Santina, as Miss WrestleMania. And Beth, of course, came out and told him to knock it off and challenged him to a match. He ended up pinning her.
That was, you know what, I like that segment for some reason.
It worked last night, and it worked tonight because the people enjoy it.
Yeah, the people get off on the Santina. The Santina thing, I mean, it's like the Charlie Haas thing when he was doing the imitations. There's going to come a point, and I don't know if it's going to be sooner or later, but there's going to come a point where you have to stop.
Yeah.
But, you know, week one isn't that point. So for a while, I think this is going to be pretty amusing.
Yeah.
And it worked tonight, yeah.
And then finally we got Orton versus Vince, and of course Vince attacked him and was beating him up early. And I know when Shane did this, it was appalling. I was less appalled when Vince did it because at least Vince was actually hitting him hard, as opposed to Orton missing him and Orton having to sell all this stuff. So
yeah, he was, but God, Vince is terrible.
Vince is horrendous, and selling was even worse.
Because like for the first 2 minutes, I was thinking, this may be the worst match on Raw all year. I mean, worse than Divas match. I mean, it's Vince McMahon with all that presence, and Vince McMahon and Randy Orton coming off of that, the punt and all this. And I mean, it had no heat at all. I mean, the crowd was just completely dead, and the match was horrible.
Yeah.
You know, at least it only went, I mean, that 4 minutes felt like an hour. You know, finally when it was over and they did the beatdown, it got a little bit better, but oh God, you know. I mean, he did punch him hard every punch. I mean, I thought he was going to like
kill
knock
the poor
Randy
guy
Orton out by accident.
Yeah,
because he was so scared of like looking weak, so he's just punching him as hard as he could.
Oh yeah,
and he had those gloves on to make sure he didn't hurt his hand.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. So of course we had I guess Orton set up for the he hit the RKO on the setup for the soccer kick. Shane ran down. Legacy ran down. Hunter meandered on down. That guy can't even move. He's getting.
You think he can't move? What about Batista? Batista shouldn't be back.
No, he shouldn't.
So anyway, go ahead.
I'm just saying, Hunter at least used to be able to move and.
Well, he can't run.
He's falling off the cliff fast.
Yeah, he can't run. Well, you know, part of the thing is like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. They say he's, I don't know, 255. I think he's looking like 265 to me.
Yeah.
But you know, the thing that people don't know about Hunter is Hunter actually has like small wrists. And if you remember when he was in WCW, when he'd been on the, you know, I presume, you know, given that he'd done bodybuilding contests, that he did certain things. And then also because he had a huge physique when he went to Kowalski, but when he got to WCW as Terror Rising, he was really skinny, and I just remember some of the guys going like that met him just go, if you look at him, you know, like with his wrists and things like that, he's a real skinny guy, gassed like crazy. Okay, so now he's 40 years old, almost 40 or 40, whatever, because I've seen his birthday in 68 and also in 69. So you know, the Japanese thing is usually more accurate, and that's a 68, but you know, maybe he was born in 69. But anyway, the point is that that's a lot of weight to carry at that age with those quads that have been torn. And yeah, he it's going to work against him. He's going to get hurt more trying to keep that mass on him. I mean, no question. He can't run at all.
Yeah, for those of you that have tapes from, is there a DX DVD coming out, or is that just a book?
The DX book is coming out.
All right, go back and watch some of the old DX skits for those of you that have it. When it was like late '97, early '98, and Shawn Michaels was bigger than Triple H at the time, and that'll kind of give you an idea of how much that man has grown since that period.
Yeah.
So anyway, they ended up with Legacy beaten on him, and then finally Batista made his big return and laid everybody out and gave Cody the sit-out power bomb, and then Vince announced that and this was actually interesting because Vince apparently now, I guess, he's just not that tough anymore. He admitted that he had been taken out of the main event. He I guess isn't the guy to be in the match, and so he's replacing himself with the Animal Batista.
The Animal Batista looked, oh, God, 285?
He was huge.
He was. His traps were gigantic. But he just had surgery for his hamstring. And his legs were still huge.
Crazy.
Crazy how that happened.
Well,
you know, because
work your thighs.
He hasn't been on the road.
That too.
He hasn't been on the road.
You could stay at home.
You know, the problem is, he was on the road. So there goes that argument.
Well, I don't know. I don't know how to answer that question.
He went all over the world.
Yes, he did.
But anyway, the point being that when Dave did the run-in, my God, he could not move at all. I mean, it was so bad in the sense of his being immobile that he was limping badly on the leg that he had the surgery on. So it's like, you know, the idea that he's healed, he could not possibly be healed. You know, I don't know if he'd even be healed by May when he was supposed to come back, but when he did that thing, you could see that you know, limping down the aisle after surgery, you know, that to me tells me that, man, you rushed back. And then, you know, and Dave, you know, Dave is in his 40s, and he's a, you know, I mean, he gets, you know, 3 torn muscles a year on average anyway. Coming back early, coming back with that size, that's a recipe for you know, he's going to get another injury. You know, I mean, we know it's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to happen, and hopefully it doesn't happen before the pay-per-view here.
Yeah, but I mean, because at least with Cena, you know, who's been getting hurt a lot, Cena's only 31, and he ain't carrying that kind of mass on him.
No.
Like Batista. I mean, I was like, God damn, he's almost like he used to be. I mean, he was pretty darn close to what he used to be.
He was very, very large.
You know, and again, at 41, whatever he is, 40, whatever.
Got to stay in that gym, you know, as you get older.
And when you get older, you're supposed to drop weight, you know, and be healthier. You shouldn't look like you looked when you're 28.
Yeah,
you know, you don't have that. You shouldn't have that mass. I mean, Luger did, but Luger couldn't move when he was 40 either, you know.
And Luger's not ended up in the best of shape either as he's reaching 50 years old here.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
So that's the story there. That's Raw, everybody. And I guess we got SmackDown tomorrow night, and they've already taped the final edition of Impact. So I guess we don't have an Impact taping tomorrow. I guess
no Impact taping.
Yeah, I guess we'll see what they do.
No, it's interesting. They really pushed the Superstar show tonight.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. Again, they didn't think this through because next week nobody knows what's going on because they have to tape an hour of ECW and they have to tape an hour of Superstars, but they have a 3-hour Raw.
Yeah.
And they're starting the 3-hour Raw, I believe, in Atlanta at like 7:45 and not 6:45. So I could be wrong, but I think that's what it is. So they don't have time to tape like either of those two shows. So I don't know if that means they're going to be taping 4 hours on Tuesday.
Yeah, they may tape it tomorrow.
What?
They may tape it tomorrow.
4 hours tomorrow?
Yeah.
They could do that. They could double up on ECW tomorrow, and then. But if that was the case, they should have taped an hour of ECW tonight, and then another hour tomorrow, which actually would have made sense, but they didn't.
Not a lot of thinking going on here.
Oh my God, I know. It's just really, it's really frustrating. I mean, you know, they're still the major league, and they'll be fine. They can overcome it. But geez.
You know, is Vince stumbling on his line tonight, like he'd forgotten what he was supposed to say?
Oh yeah.
I think times are tough for Vince these last few weeks.
Oh yeah, well, and Vicky too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, hey, they just had WrestleMania. It's got to be mentally almost impossible for these guys to get up the day after WrestleMania.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, you know, you know, they say it all the time. It's like, you know, you play in the Super Bowl, and the next day you got to go to, you got to drive 3 hours and tape television. It's like, you know, you go to that the highest of highs, and then you got to do a TV show the next day. You're gonna be, you know.
Well, this was the Toyota Center, right?
Yeah, well, that's right. They didn't have to drive.
They didn't have to go anywhere. They could sleep in today.
Yeah, I guess.
At least they had that.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to open up the phone lines here in a moment, but let's do some of the questions. I know we've got some mailbag questions here, so I will start. This person's basically asking about any injuries at the show last night.
I haven't heard anything, which is amazing.
It is amazing.
You know, I by the way, I've had a bunch of wrestlers emailing about that Undertaker spot.
About how incredibly scary it was?
Yeah, you know, hey, do you know who the catcher was?
No idea.
I don't either. That was they put him in a terrible position.
Yes, they did. That
because he had to like drop that camera and catch that giant guy, and then and he didn't go far enough. And oh man, that was and I don't know who he was.
Yeah, yeah, that was bad news. Yeah. Maybe it was the same guy that from Hell in the Cell, the same cameraman.
Maybe.
That was an awesome match, by the way, both of them.
Yeah.
So if Michaels does indeed retire at Mania 26, who do you think his opponent will be? No idea.
Too early to say.
No idea.
If it was a month away, I wouldn't even know.
If it were a week away, there would be questions, I'm sure.
It'll be Hulk Hogan.
No. This person here says it's the second time where Triple H is overshadowed in a main event by a match that should have headlined the show. Do you think this frustrates him? And why wouldn't Vince give the guys their due and place the correct match on last to end the show? He had to know, like he knew with Rock and Hogan, that there wasn't going to be anything able to follow this classic. You know, I got to say something here. I know the idea is you end the match with a title match, but nowadays, these titles are just... Nobody cares.
Well,
nobody cares about...
Part of the reason is how... When you have two world titles, you have no world titles. If you had one world title and it was a protected world title, in theory, you know, most cases you would end the show with it. But you know what? I mean, even in the days of like the NWA touring world champion and everything, I mean, I would say probably 90 to 95% of the time, 90% of the time, I wouldn't say 95, the world championship match went on last. But it didn't always go on last, and when it shouldn't. You know, if there was like a super hot program in the territory, you know, and you had your world championship match, you might put it on second to last. It wasn't like this rule of thumb you had to do it, you know. And again, I think that there was this thing where, you know, everyone's going like, well, everyone knew. And, you know, and yeah, everyone knew, but I don't know that they knew. I think that in their mind, the hottest program was Triple H and Orton.
I at least thought Triple H and Orton would be a not better than Shawn and Undertaker, but at least a better match than it was. It wasn't even that.
Well, I don't think. Yeah, I don't know that they thought. But you know what? I mean, it's like no. Did they think it would be better than Shawn and Undertaker? Probably not. But they probably thought it would be only slightly less.
Sure.
And it wasn't. But that's what they thought.
Yeah.
And more importantly, it was the world title match, and you know there's that, and you know they I don't think they foresaw what happened, and I didn't either. You know,
they could not possibly.
Triple H and Randy Orton were gonna have a really good match, and they didn't.
Did WWE know who Frank Shamrock was?
Yes, for sure, but I think that I you know wasn't a big enough celebrity to identify. I guess,
yeah.
And I'm sure that was something that very much was discussed. And the reason I say that was because wasn't discussed, you know, Jim Ross would have recognized him on site.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, I think it was very clear that, you know, you mentioned Carl Edwards because John Cena, he's, you know, but you don't mention Frank Shamrock. And so they didn't. But, yeah, they know, I mean, there were, you know, many, many people there. You know, I mean, every wrestler there knew who he was, and you know, enough other people knew who he was. It wasn't like, you know, whatever. But he and Mickey Rourke are like best friends. So
let's go to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Radio with Brian and Dave. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Michael from Denmark.
Michael, what's going on?
Not too much. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good.
I wanted to ask, now with the Lumberjack match on Raw and also before Mania, I was wondering if you guys could talk a little bit about sort of the origin of the Lumberjack match concept.
Paul Bunyan.
Oh, that's okay. Right, yeah.
Paul Bunyan had a feud, and a bunch of woodsmen got together to ensure that it didn't get out of hand.
No. The first time I ever heard of a Lumberjack match as a kid, it was Roy Shires explaining that in the lumberjack camps in Canada, there would be a match. You know, like two guys would have a beef, and
two woodsmen.
What?
Two woodsmen.
Yeah, two woodsmen in the lumberjack camps would have a beef, and so they would go settle it. And to make sure that one of them didn't run away, all the other lumberjacks surrounded them, and if they tried to run, they threw them back in. And it was, you know, that was the concept of the lumberjack match. But the lumberjacks didn't all interfere and fight each other in the concept, you know, in the original woodsman days. It was just when somebody tried to run, they just threw him back in so he would take his punishment. So that's the origins.
Take his beating like a man.
You got to fight like a man, yeah.
Yeah. Anything else, Michael?
No, that's pretty much it.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Really appreciate that.
Yeah. Paul Bunyan.
Paul Bunyan in the...
That's right. They explained that on one of the shows recently.
The teacher. The teacher explained that to all of us.
That's right. It was the teacher.
It was the teacher.
I was thinking about, like, man, you know...
I hope he explained it again on the pre-show that we'll end up seeing on the DVD.
That's right. He announced that match.
Yeah.
So maybe we'll have another Paul Bunyan reference.
Mike Knox looks like Paul Bunyan, so he had to have thrown it out there somewhere. This person said, did Chris the Bambi Killer from Austria really get hired by WWE...
I believe he's in Florida now.
Wow, how about
Because I seem to remember he got a new name.
Is that the same Bambi Killer from like over a decade ago?
I don't know about a decade ago, but he's been around for years, yeah.
Okay.
You know, I mean, certainly, you know, 7-8 years, yeah.
All right. Back to the phones. You are on Wrestling Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, this is Ryan in Pennsylvania.
Ryan, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm wondering, with Ken Shamrock, now that he's, you know, since he failed that steroid test, he probably won't be able to, you know, he'll be banned for at least a year or so, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking, do you think there's any chance of him going to TNA? Maybe just bring him in for a few shots?
Slim. I wouldn't say none because, you know, he's been there before and they know who he is. But I think that Ken mentally doesn't want to do pro wrestling. And if you... And you know, Ken was a pretty decent pro wrestler at one point, but I think it's pretty slim. It's possible.
I think the thing is that if you don't want to do pro wrestling, I don't think that TNA is offering you even close to the amount of money that it would take to want to do pro wrestling, if that makes sense.
Yeah, but he does need to make money.
He does, but I mean, it's not like he's going to, you know, if WWE made him an offer, whether he wanted to do pro wrestling or not, he'd take it because it would be a big offer.
Well, I don't know. You know, the thing is, though, is he, you know, he didn't like that road schedule. So, I mean...
Well, what I'm saying here is, if TNA, if they made him an offer, it's not going to be a big enough offer to sway him one way or the other.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like, Ken Shamrock isn't enough of a legend in their minds to put him in the main event mafia or something like that, you know, to bring up, because the last thing they need is another 45-year-old guy in that company on top.
They can't just call him a shooter, like someone who could do it for real?
Well, the problem is that, you know,
Ken, I guess they got,
you know, Ken's fighting record in the last couple of years hasn't been so stellar, so it's kind of hard to sell him on that. Well, you know what I mean? Like the first run in WWF, they could, and they kind of botched it, but, you know, it at least worked. You know, to a degree. This, you know, now it's just like, you know, you can't really sell them on that either.
Yeah. Back to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, what's up? Cyrus from Boston.
What's going on, Cyrus?
How you doing? I was just wondering where you guys have the Taker and Michaels match, star rating-wise.
I want to watch the DVD because the one thing that kind of I don't want to say hurt the match for me, but it certainly took me out of the match, was when I thought he died. And apparently watching it on DVD, it as Dave said yesterday, added to the drama.
I thought it
made it feel, I mean, it added more emotion to the match for me. It felt a lot more intense.
Yeah, I would like to watch it with that. And, I mean, when I watched it live when it was over, I thought, you know, 4 3/4, somewhere around there. 4 1/2, 4 3/4.
That's the range I was thinking too.
Yeah, but I mean, if I watch the DVD and just get blown away by it, but I don't know, it's hard because I mean there was that the Angle Benoit match at the Royal Rumble many years back that I think I gave 5 stars to. And actually, you know what? I watched it on the DVD and I stood by my ratings, so I take back whatever I was going to say right there. So I'll probably watch it on Blu-ray and then decide. But you know, I when I watched it live, it was 4 3/4. So. That's where I was there. Back to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from?
This is Off-Road from Newfoundland, Canada.
What's going on, Off-Road?
Nothing, man. Just finished watching Raw. And let me just say first that I love how the Raw after WrestleMania was better than any Raw leading up to the pay-per-view.
I guess that's an arguable point.
What?
An arguable point, I guess.
Yeah,
what?
I wouldn't agree with that because there were a couple Raws. There were a couple Raws recently that that I really liked a lot. And this one, aside from the Steamboat thing, I didn't think anything was all that special.
What'd you like on the show?
Ricky Steamboat is better than 75% of the roster right now, and the man's, what, 50?
56.
You know,
we're hearing a lot about that today.
You know what? They could use him in spots. But the thing is that after tonight, if they were going to continue to use him, they would just beat him in 3 minutes every time out because that's just how they are. So I almost hope they don't continue to use him, even though everyone's going to go like, there's going to be big pressure to use him because that's just how they are. They're going to just go, okay, we'll use him, we'll give him a minute of offense, and he'll be like, you know, the new version of Jim Duggan. And like,
okay, I don't quite know about that one.
Then that's how they book.
They do, but Steamboat.
You know, I mean, he'll be better than Jim Duggan, but. Look at Lawler. Lawler could be over. Lawler, in his own way, is a better worker than they ever let him be, if you know what I'm saying. Not that he's a great worker today, but he's still a great ring psychologist. Ric Flair always got shit on, you know, and he was a better worker than they, you know.
Well, that's true, but they did do stuff with Ric Flair, far more than they did with, say, Duggan or Lawler.
Yeah, but they buried him more than, but they still buried him 8 times out of 10, they still buried him. Only in the last run when they did the undefeated streak. Before that, he was always, you know, when he was in Evolution with Triple H, of course they protected him then. But I mean, say, when Ric Flair was there on his own, there were so many times. I mean, remember with the Mick Foley feud where, you know, the whole idea of the feud was that Ric Flair was so buried and Mick Foley was going to, you know, put him in a program and get him over. And it kind of worked. And then the day after the program ended, they had Randy Orton beat him like he was nothing.
Yeah.
And Mick Foley was all sad. It's like, I did all that work to, you know, let him have promo time, and he was great on the promos. And, you know, they wouldn't let, they'll probably make Steamboat and the promos just stand there, and the other guy just run him down, and he gets no comebacks. That's just how they are. Vince, you got to understand Vince and old people. You know, Vince, I don't know if it's because he fears being old himself, but Vince doesn't like old people, and, you know, it's just how he is. He's going to, as a novelty, like for tonight, Steamboat was awesome. But if Steamboat was there every week, he would beat him like a drum, and I wouldn't enjoy that. Even though Steamboat, you know, yeah, in some ways, the guy's a, you know, especially tonight, he can do some things like better than kind of anyone but Michaels there, you know? So, I mean, he's got that certain way about him that actually, you know what else? It actually works more today than it worked in his prime, believe it or not.
Because it's unique now.
You know, you're right. That's exactly what it is. Because you know the guy who, Brian, have you ever seen Johnny Saint work?
I actually was talking to someone this weekend who was raving about Johnny Saint.
Johnny Saint, okay. I've seen some Johnny Saint matches, okay. But I watched Johnny Saint in the 70s when he was like in his prime and really good. And I mean, he was great then. Don't get me wrong. But there were like, I don't want to say 50 because that's terrible. But let's say there were 15 Johnny Saints in the 70s, okay? And, I mean, he was really great then. But the point is, there were others, and if you ask me in the 70s, you know, Johnny Saint, Tony Charles, Keith Hayward, Steve Wright. I mean, I mean, you know, all those guys, you know, and they were all really good, but it was like I wouldn't say, oh, this guy's like just incredibly awesome. But now he's 66 years old, and if I watched him now, and which I have on a couple of the the YouTube matches, and I just go like, this guy's like incredible, he's unbelievable. Then I started thinking like, you know, Johnny Eagle, you know, was a wrestler who came through California, and he worked a lot in Oregon too. And he did that style, and he was just a prelim guy who was really entertaining. He wasn't even, like, a big deal doing that all that exact same stuff. Not quite as good. Johnny Saint was better than Johnny Eagle, but you know, pretty much, you know, that same type of stuff. You know, it's just like, but now that no one's doing it, yeah, man, it's like, I think that is more of an argument for the fact that our homogenized style, where everyone's taught to do the same thing, and so those old styles have been forgotten. And then when you see someone doing that old style, it's just so refreshing because no one's doing it. But, yeah, because I was, again, watching tonight, it's like, you know, he's doing the stuff he did before. And he was, you know, I'll tell you, reflexes-wise and stuff tonight, he was pretty damn good.
Yeah.
I mean, I was pretty damn impressed by him tonight, you know, with his quickness at his age, you know, and the fact he, when he's in there for a short enough period of time. And, I mean, guys told me. I mean, before, several guys have told me that, you know, when Steamboat, don't worry about Steamboat in that match, you know, because he's in the ring all the time and he can still do his stuff. But, yeah, I mean, it's like, I saw Steamboat throughout his career, and I mean, he was one of the greats, but in his own way, I was kind of more, you know, I don't say more entertained, but I guess because no one else does it, he was more of a master tonight than when he was a master.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Let's take one more call here. You're on Wrestling Observer Radio. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hello, this is Deca, and I'm calling from New Jersey.
Deca, what's going on?
Oh, man.
Nothing. I heard that you said that this was going to be the final call, and it's appropriate, because I wanted to ask Dave a very important question.
Uh-oh.
Have you seen, Dave, have you seen the Dave's leather jacket thread on the board?
I know it exists, but I have not seen it.
Oh. Well,
we're going to end the show on a downer.
Well, we'll take one more call, but thanks for calling in there, Deca. I really appreciate it. One of these days when you have some time, which will probably be never, but if it ever happens.
It's not going to be this week.
That's undoubtedly true. And it wasn't last week either, unfortunately.
I still got to watch WEC. I got to watch Bully Beatdown, which I heard was really good.
I enjoyed Bully Beatdown. I saw it when I was down there.
Did you? Okay. So yeah. I got that on the DVD player, and then I think those are the only things I actually knew. Oh, no, and Yeah, I haven't watched SmackDown either, but I heard I can do that one in 15 minutes.
Yeah, you're going to have to do that one this week, because I haven't watched that one either, so.
Yeah.
All right, now you are the real last caller here. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hi, it's Santino calling from Singapore.
Santino, what's going on? Santino or Santina?
Santino.
Okay, go ahead.
Glad to see you guys survived the weekend. My question is regarding Mick Foley. When does his contract with TNA expire, and what's his status there? I mean, is he happy, or does he realize it's a sinking ship?
He loves it there, and he had his original deal was 6 months, so I'm guessing that, when did he start? Started towards the end of last
September,
year.
Right?
What?
September,
last
October?
September, if I'm not wrong.
It was in the fall, right?
Yeah, September, October.
Okay, so September, so September, October, November, December, January, February. Okay, so obviously it's already up. So he's probably signed a new deal. I don't know how long the new deal is, but he loves it there. He absolutely loves it there. That's why he's wrestling, and that's why he's losing weight, and that's why he's gone back to promo land, and he's changing his character, and he thinks he makes a difference, and he does make a difference, and it's made a difference to everyone there, and when you talk to people there, they know that he's the difference. You know, it's not like when he was in WWE at times where he was really good, and you know, they maybe some people resented it. You know, and he, you know, and again, they only wanted to use him in that role that I said about Steamboat earlier in the show. I mean, Mick Foley was another. Mick Foley was like a legend of their glory period, and you know, he could have been, you know, if he was used properly and sparingly, he could have been a drawing card for a long, long time, because when he first would come back, he was always a drawing card. But instead, they only wanted to use him because he was old, to get people over and to get knocked out all the time. And because that was their thing. It's like, well, you know, it's an easy way to get heat. We'll just keep beating, you know, we'll bring a guy in to beat Mick Foley. And that's the thing. They're going to go sit there and go like, wow, it's so easy to get heat on Steamboat. So let's just, you know, have Randy Orton RKO him and stuff. So that's what I'm saying. Like, if Steamboat stays, you know, that's just the mentality there. Well, anyway, going back to, Mick Foley loves it there. So that's the answer to the question.
Sorry, last question. Why do you think Impact is drawing so many viewers? Personally, I think it's Black Magic, but I could be wrong.
Oh, well, lately, I mean, well, the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks the TV's been good, but no, it's just, you know, it's there's a lot of reasons. I mean, more people are watching sports on television than before. It's just a cultural thing, just because I don't know if it's the economy. I don't know exactly what it is, and you know, but it's across the board. I know it's not the case for SmackDown, but and again, if it translates into them making money, that's great. I mean, I know that they live and die by those numbers, and that's not the numbers you should live and die by, but it is the numbers that they live and die by. But this pay-per-view that they have coming up, I'm pretty sure it's going to do well, even though as people in that company have pointed out to me, it's on an absolutely horrible, horrible day, because it's the day after a UFC, and it's the same billing period as not just WrestleMania, but a second WWE pay-per-view, although Backlash probably won't do all that well. And so it does have that going against it, but I think that there's enough unique TNA fans and the build to Sting and Foley, apparently. I mean, it's been good so far, but the last Thursday show on the, whatever day that is, the 16th, the show on the 16th is one, people are saying, is one of the best shows in the history of the company. I mean, we'll see. But, you know, if they have a great go-home show, you know, I mean, they may do some pay-per-view business with this one, but you know, all the problems that we've talked about before, you know, they're still there. I mean, they need to get someone under 40, you know, who can go on top and you know, they had that with Joe at one point, but you know, they squandered that one pretty bad.
I think that's going to do it for today. We're going to be back on Wednesday with a brand new show. We'll probably try and take some calls there as well. And, of course, new issues of the newsletter. Got Figure 4 coming out tomorrow. Got The Observer coming out on Wednesday. And then another big week coming up. So no shortage of things to do. And I'm wrapping it up here. So thanks, everybody, for listening. And we shall talk to you again tomorrow.